long time now I'm an addict. It's really good to be in a meeting. Thanks for asking me to share, Natasha. And thanks, Shireen, for your chair. Really nice to hear what you had to say. And yeah, really powerful message. I really like that you brought up, there's some things that I found really jarring. I'm quite honest and vocal as well. And there's some things that I found really jarring, and it was really good to hear you talk about some of those things that are really mixed messages. One of my favourite ones that I like to pull people on when they say things like stick with the winners. What the fuck's that about? You know, if we all stuck with the winners, what would the newcomer do? You know, there are a lot of things that get bantered around that aren't Narcotics Anonymous. They're just, I don't know what they are. They're certainly not part of the 12-step. Fellowship, you know, of hope, promise, freedom, you know, and the traditions that you mentioned as well. My sponsor is really big on the traditions. We've done the work through the book of the traditions, and I found it really enlightening, and it really helped bring me into kind of like being a bit more human about things. So it's great to be here, and there's a couple of people in here that I've known for, you know, a couple of decades, and it's just great to be clean, isn't it? You know, I really want to start off by saying that, you know, I'm really, really, really grateful that I'm clean. In 20 days, I'll be 5 years in recovery. And I say in recovery because I've had more time than this before, but I wasn't in recovery for all of that time. And I'm approaching a stage in my life now where things are very, very different. And similarly to what was just shared, you know, I kind of like I was 38, and you know, I'd like to say that I could kind of sort of see how messy it had got, and kind of what started happening was, so I was back living at my parents. I've been court ordered to live there. I was in a situation in Hertfordshire, and I was court ordered to live at my parents for a specific amount of time with what was called a DRR. And if I didn't complete this DRR, there was going to be consequences. And so I thought, right, well, when the solicitor put it to me, when I was up in court and he put it to me, and I thought, you know what, I'll take that option and see how we go. And I kind of knew that I could get some support and some help by doing that, because I've been trying to access support and I'd got previous clean time. So I knew about the fellowship and the 12-step program, but I was just in the community, I was finding it really, really difficult. And I kind of knew that I needed some structure. I was a bit like one of those, you know, like some plants, they kind of like, they need a really tight box to kind of like grow into amazing flowers. And then you've got some plants that you can kind of plant in the garden and they can grow with loads of space around them. I was one of those type of people that needed a really tight box put around him to kind of get the seed to germinate. And I knew that. And so I welcomed the structure. And I didn't know that I was going to meet a couple of dealers that were also on a DRR, and things were going to go terribly wrong terribly quickly. But in a strange set of circumstances that are way beyond any of my knowledge, it all worked in my favour in the end, because what it did, it brought me to my knees really, really quickly. And, you know, thank God for crack cocaine is my truth. Thank God. You know, another thing here as well, you know, the truth is the drugs were the solution to the problem for me for a long time, because the problem that I found out about was me, you know. And I like what Shireen shared as well. You know, I've got an amazing story. If anyone wants to sit and play the victim role with me, I've got a wicked story, and we can share all that stuff. And counsellors love listening to all that stuff. And as beneficial as it's been for me to understand about the stuff from the past, it never ever stopped me using. You know what, I've been able to clearly make the distinction between in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous through good sponsorship, through making loads of fucking mistakes, through still making loads of mistakes, but having a circle of people that are loving and don't want me to use, so don't shame me for those mistakes, encourage me to grow and learn from them, is that my past and my challenging upbringing has got nothing to do with the reason why I use drugs. It's an excellent catalyst for me to want to escape in the using of drugs, but it doesn't make me an addict. You know, I'm an addict because I suffer with a disease of addiction. You know, the storyboard that I've got is just one of those ones that is really good for using and trying to escape life, But so, you know, I've met so many people. You know, I was on this one course through someone that I met in NA. It was a self-development thing, and there was an astrophysicist there who suffered with all the same stuff that I did, apart from the disease of addiction, you know, but had developed addictive tendencies just like me in a different light, in a different way. And it kind of really brought it home, you know, the story about being in the children's home, being adopted, not knowing who my parents were. Oh, it was so difficult for me. It's got nothing to do with me being an addict. It's perfect reason for me to experiment with drugs and find some relief from that torture, but it doesn't make me an addict. The reason that I'm an addict, I found out when I was 6 years clean, and I'd been away from the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous for a couple of years, and I learned about step one, and not about step one when I've already picked up the pipe and I'm feeling powerless and unmanageable. I mean, when I've got unmanageable. Cherie was talking about this at the end of the show. Shireen, sorry, and about that, how the insanity had crept in. And so my truth is, what's really important for me to maintain some semblance of desire to stay here in this fellowship is not to work backwards through the steps whilst I'm clean, you know. And that starts with the idea, you know. So the 12-step process is what keeps my mind occupied enough with the idea that being clean in those difficult days that have been shared, because they do come. And that's another thing, that whole, oh, my best day, whatever that fucking mad saying is that people say. Do you know, I've had some fucking dark days in recovery, trust me, that are like way more challenging than my hardest day using. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I'd have given my right arm to be able to have a day off using with the darkness I had to face in recovery, you know, but I haven't used, and that's amazing. But it's not mine, and anything that I share, it's never mine, truthfully. You know, some of the stories you hear are going to be my experience. This is all just borrowed stuff from people with lots of experience sharing it with me, and some people with a couple of days sharing something to me that goes, what are you fucking moaning about, Tony? You know, what are you really moaning about? You know, the person with one day cleaner sometimes enlightened me and snapped me out of my self-obsessed little mind about how difficult life is for me. And all that talk about how, you know, when, so get a bit of time up, and then it's like, oh, the path gets narrower, you know, and you've got a bit of time, and then you hear someone coming with what, you know, a day, and they're telling you how fucking hard it is for them. And all of a sudden I realize the path ain't that fucking narrow. Yeah, I remember that feeling going to the detox. I've been using all night long. My parents in the front of the fucking car driving 300 miles because my sister had had to intervene because I didn't have nothing. My sister had intervened. You know, I'm blessed, man. And part of that's a part of that intervention. So luckily for me, around 2 years clean, I got a chance to do the amends process with my sister. So I'd ripped through the family's peace of mind, never mind how much money I'd had here, there and everywhere in different ways and forms, but I'd ripped out the peace of mind in my family. And so with my sister, so she came into a look, it was mad how everything happened. She came into a lucky set of circumstances. I was binging for 3 days, and then I ended up in this detox. Not because I had the ability to do anything about it, just because I got taken there. And so yeah, so 2 years on now, and I've maintained my recovery and done what we do, and stuck with it when it got dark. And so I was in my amends process, and I approached my sister and I said, you know what, I know it cost 5 grand for that detox, and now I need to pay that money back. And I also need to talk to you about a few things and listen to a few things that you might have to share with me. Is that okay with you? And she flat went, no, of course it's not. You know that one they do. You're my brother. I'm just glad you're clean. Da, 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 da. And before, in every other clean time I'd had, and this is just my experience, I've gone, nice one, new pair of trainers for me, off we go. Do you know what I mean? This time it was different. I wanted that. It talked about it clearly in our book, and I was feeling it. So it was about 2 years clean, and I could see that I weren't looking the world in the eye the way it talks about, you know, the freedom, walk the earth, a free man or woman. And I wanted that. And so I spoke to my sponsor about it, and he said, there's the ways that we're going to do amends with you. And, you know, amends means to change. It's not about me coming. I've said sorry a million fucking times to everyone. It's about me changing my behavior. So with various people, I did apologize and then ask them how they felt and is there anything I can do? And so with my sister, she said, I don't want to talk about the past. And so I learned to shut my mouth. I learned to shut my fucking mouth and not try and remove my guilt by making her talk about what she didn't want to talk about. And hear me talking about it and trying to extract that relief. I learned to shut my fucking mouth. That was the part of the amends. The biggest part of the amends was, so she got divorced. And then she had to like move out of the house and lots of things, and ended up getting a house, and this house needed a lot of work doing on it. And so she got a quote for the work, and it was 6 grand, and she's 300 miles away. And so I travelled every other weekend for 1 whole year and completed all the work they needed doing on her house. So the financial amends was made, and so that I could also listen to my sister's difficulty and take some of that stuff on my shoulders a bit, that she'd done for years for me. And that's the beauty of this for me now. That it's not, I don't give, I don't, I really keyed in with what you were saying, Shireen. So I've DJed, and I've had a really lucky time doing some really amazing stuff with some people that I grew up whose records I bought and record labels, and I was following certain things, and I've had a really good experience of certain things. And I understand what you mean about enjoying kind of like that affirmation and the limelight. But for me now, I've kind of sort of put all that down, and I've done a few NA things. I've never done anything to get paid since I got clean with that stuff. What I've done is offer service free. I'm trained in the practice of Reiki, and I've offered that free at every NA event that I can. And I've had some wonderful experiences with people who are suffering with anxiety, and they just sit there. And through their ability to sit there and be in the room and take that risk, they found some peace for 20 minutes. And it meant more than being on stage and getting everyone going, "Oh, you're playing some fucking great music." And so to be there with my sister, that's the stuff that I'm seeking. That's the stuff that maintains my mind. Because it has to get better clean, or I'll use. I know that. I fucking know that. I've got enough experience of my own, and I've watched enough people this time around to know that that is the truth for this addict here. If I'm not comfortable clean, I will use. First of all, I'll act out, like Cherie said, and trust me, there's women that like to kneel down as well to get their drugs, and men that like to do that to get their drugs from them. Yeah, so this ain't just you know what I mean? I'll start acting out with behavior, and as I was describing. So for me, the most powerful thing that I kind of learned coming in this time was, so as I'm going through the process of the 12 steps, it's just as easy to slide down backwards. So, it talks about in step 12, having had a spiritual awakening. Well, once I have become the spirit of fucking everything and it's all about me, I'll slide into the step 11. I'll be no longer giving it away. I've got fuck all to give away anyway. Praying and meditation will be off the cards because I won't need to do that because I'll have all the answers. I won't need to do any inventory on me. I'll be doing it all on you, like Shireen said about gossiping outside. I won't have any amends to make because nothing's going to be my fault. It's all going to be your fault. This is all clean, by the way. There'll be no lists being written down because there'll be no one that I've harmed. Everyone will be harming me. I'll be back in victim role. There'll be no shortcomings to observe because the world will be doing wrong to me. So the defects and shortcomings will not be acknowledged in me. They'll be acknowledged in you and how my life could be better if you weren't doing them. So I'll be into step 4 now, and the list of things that I've done wrong and my behavior, my part in it, will no longer be relevant whatsoever. That end column will have changed to what has happened to me and how you did it to me. So, I'm not in God's will anymore. I'm not on step 3. I've taken my will back. I've gone straight to where Shireen said to. I've gone completely insane. My emotional manageability is non-existent. I will become powerless, and therefore I'll pick up. And it was the most enlightening fucking thing. And it makes me emotional thinking about it, that somebody had the guts to share that with me, that I approach step one clean quicker than I do in my using. It's very obvious to me in my using how powerless and unmanageable I am. Very obvious. I'm not one of those people that came in and was like, "Oh, I don't know." Step one with me was just like, I see it. I fucking see it. What I didn't see was how it can be like that clean. So when I was in these behaviors of maybe not going to meetings anymore, starting to get jarred with people, I didn't realize that I was becoming emotionally unmanageable. In other fellowships, they call it emotional sobriety. That sense of wholeness and connectedness slowly disappearing, where I start running the show again and I start trying to orchestrate everything. And usually, and this is a really important thing for me to share as well, is what happens for a short amount of time is the world becomes great when I'm orchestrating it, but not for very fucking long. And during that time, while I'm fucking running the show, I'll out everything, and then all of a sudden I'll be on my own. When the world turns, because as it does, because it don't fucking run on my show for that long, and then all of a sudden it's difficult, I'll have a massive problem. I won't know that though, and that is the truth, that I can drive things forward, I can make things happen. But I forget that's a short-term thing, and it's good to reach out. It's good to have other people there, but keep them there. That thing, and I hear this a lot as well, and it fucking jars me. That thing where people, oh, keep coming back, right? And then you get these, I'm trying not to swear, you get these other interpretations of that that'll go, oh, just stay. Like, if it was that fucking easy, you wouldn't need to keep coming back. Jesus, do you know what I mean? I've had to come off social media. So during this pandemic, I've been blessed to. So get this. So I was the guy who was on the DTTO at 22, on a DRR at 38, and looking at, I was on a suspended sentence halfway in between that. Again, my victim story worked really, really well in court. So I work in prison now. Fucking hell, can you believe it? I fucking work in jail. I've got keys to three fucking jails. I'm getting keys to another two in the next 2 months. With fucking in men's prisons. Unbelievable. Anyway, I divert. So I work for this charity, and I help people with their health, particularly with blood-borne viruses, mainly hepatitis C, sometimes hep B, and HIV. And so what's happened, right, is obviously, like most people in healthcare, we've all been redeployed into the vaccination program. And I've seen people die. I've got work colleagues that have died. I've watched people get sick. I've watched it fucking go rife in the prison system. And then I've seen loads of stuff on social media about, is this real? Is it that? Is it the other? And I'm not here to talk about that. What I want to say is I had to come off social media rather than me getting annoyed with what I was seeing, but participating and doing the recovery thing. Oh, well, I'm not getting involved, but observing it, and sometimes allowing myself to come home after work, right? And then, but be on there. But because I wasn't participating, think that I was doing well when I was getting annoyed and being distracted from what I could be doing with my life. So I had to come off social media. So I deleted both my profiles, one of the best fucking things I've done, instead of blaming what was going on. Because what, like I said, it ain't my world. I ain't running the fucking show. So what's going to happen is going to happen. It's about me taking responsibility. And so that was, one of the greatest gifts in recovery. Social media is just a metaphor for many things that I've had to do, is me take responsibility for it. If I want the freedom, I needed to go and pay my sister off and sit down and listen to what she had to say. Not tell her to try and talk about my using and how it affected her. She didn't want to talk about that. I had to shut the fuck up and listen to her divorce and watch her cry and hold her when she needed holding. With other situations, I've had to let people do their thing and say fuck all about it when it's been really fucking hard. With friendships that are burning out, and that I'm allowing to continue when they're unhealthy for me, I've had to step back from. With my parents, similarly, I had to listen to some things that my mum had to say that I found really difficult to listen to. And I had to listen and say nothing back and let her have her space to get rid of that, And slowly over time, and so it's taken a while with a few people to get comfortable with me again. I did a lot of damage. When you have a lot of clean time and then you go out, it does a lot of fucking damage to people. They start to believe in you, and it's taken some time for some people to heal around me. One of the most beautiful things, and not sure how much time I've got, but it's been the ability to parent my son and make that effort to reach out when I don't really know what's going on and I'm unsure about things. That's actually how I got back in touch with Natasha, was when I was reaching out for some advice and some support around some things that I was concerned about with my son. And so I've been reaching out to people that have got some experience with things. Not to, I'm looking towards professionals for diagnosis. What I'm looking to is people in recovery who have got children, who have experienced the difficulty of having children whilst using and then getting clean, and maybe some of the things that are around that that make it, difficult at times. Sometimes I speak to people just to say, you know what, I find this fucking hard, but what a beautiful experience. So I just had annual leave, and I went home, and I was asked to come home. Fucking hell, it's pretty amazing, really. My parents wanted me there. Do you know what I mean? And they wanted to see me, and they knew that I was going to be there, be me, and leave being me. And I got to spend it with my son and my mum, his grandma. And it's the first time I've hugged my mum for a year. Not because I don't want to give her hugs, just because of the whole thing that's going on in the world. And wonderful experience. My son really enjoyed himself, and some amazing things have happened in recovery for me. My son's mum's clean. My extended family are more accepting of who I am. Yeah, it's been amazing, really. And the reason that I think that I've been less resistant this time is the same thing that was shared with me in some of the meetings in 1999. Thanks, Bex. And nothing's changed. Again, Shireen said it at the beginning or at the end of her share, the four S's, sponsorship, serving, steps. Sponsorship, service, sharing, and steps. Nothing has actually changed. My ears just opened in a different way. And there are people I know that remained clean. And when I asked them, so when I got back and some of my peer group had got 17 years and I was coming back. And I remember being in a meeting in Brixton, and I'll share this as well, and I think this stuff's important to share too. So I had a commitment at 30 days clean. This is years ago. People thought it was a good idea. Someone thought it was a good idea to put me up for a GSR commitment. Anyway, I was about 30 days clean. Bad idea, because it was payday, right? And so I got the money from the meeting that was going to be for the literature, right? It was about 80 quid. And I had to walk down Cold Harbour Lane, and I was supposed to get to area or whatever it was. Yeah, it's been so long I've been to a face-to-face meeting. Yeah, so back then, so you went to area. Now you can do it all online, and you had to give the dough in. Anyway, this was on the fucking Wednesday. Area was on the Friday, whatever it was. As if I'm going to make it back from Camberwell to Brixton, passing the front line like 30 days clean with 80 quid in my pocket, ain't gonna happen. So anyway, so I've spunked the money, obviously, and then gone missing for a few days. And then been avoiding the meetings, gone back into the meetings, usual stories. Anyway, so anyway, years on now, right? I'm 17 days clean. I've got a friend who's 17 years clean, right? He comes, sits next to me. It's him who put me up for the commitment. The sweat started dripping off me. And then I realized there was three people, right, in this tri. I thought I was being triangulated, right? Because they're all from the same area in London. They're not from London, they're from up north, right? So I thought there's this conspiracy going on here. I was just cracked, still fucking cracked psychosis. And so I thought, fuck it, I've got to tell him, I need to get this off my chest. I went, listen, when you did that for me, da, 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 I fucking took the money. He went, how much was it? And then he just dropped it straight in the hat. He went, you don't have to carry that anymore. That's the fucking power of recovery, working both ways. He did not want me, he saw me as a friend, and he was pleased to see me and glad I was back. Yeah, and he didn't want me to suffer so that I would be out of the meetings again. And obviously since then I've done what I needed to do with that scenario, which again was one of those I told, I don't want the money back. So there's been a few things I've done quietly that have, I believe, shown my appreciation for that. But what it did was it kept me in the meetings. They say we don't shoot our wounded. That was a beautiful example. And so I asked this guy, and I asked a few people at time, I said, what did you do thinking that there was something I've missed? I fucking hell. It makes me laugh now. Like, I said, what did you do? What was it that I didn't do? Da, da, da. They went, we just carried on doing what you stopped fucking doing. It's so simple, isn't it? But we just, I just need to remember that this illness wakes up the next day, and that I can't, and it's all kind of cliche, but it's highly unlikely that I will stay emotionally manageable on yesterday's recovery effort today for very long. So for me, there is a maintenance part of this that I do regularly, and I'm lucky that when I don't do it, because I created a very small, tight network of people, they notice and they tell me, "Are you doing your shit? Because you're looking a bit weird and acting a bit strange." And they remind me. So, I'm really blessed to be here. It's great to be in a meeting. It's wonderful to see some people that I know. And thank fuck for Zoom, man. Thank God for Zoom. Can you imagine what it would have been like, without Zoom? So all of a sudden it just stopped like that. How blessed are we, really? How blessed, this happened, this opportunity. It's great to be clean, and I will end on this, and it's something that should really, I could feel it sort of vibrating inside me as she described it. There's one promise in this fellowship, and that is freedom from active addiction. The rest of it, you're gonna have to work for. It's that simple, and it's a choice. Once step one's been done, the rest of it's a choice. So I'm really grateful to be here, and for everybody that made the meeting possible. Thanks again, Natasha, for asking me to share. Thanks for the people in service of the meeting, and thanks for your lovely share before.